The following study is a Wednesday night lesson given by Pastor Brett Metter at Athey Creek Christian Fellowship.
All right, let's get to it. Joshua chapter 14 is where we left off. I'm always glad to see you guys. We got some work ahead of us. I really do like these sections because some people might say these are the boring sections of the Bible. This is where you know, when you need to go to sleep at night and you can't sleep, just read Joshua 14 through 19. A bunch of names of places. Some of you snore that way, I suppose, but that's the way they do it in the cartoons, at least. But there's a few sections that are exciting and fun, but others would say, well, what's with the lists of the Bible? One of the things that I like about the Bible, it's not just a book of good literature. And it's not just a book of great stories. You see, you know, you might even find a secularist say, well, the Bible's a wonderful book of literature. But if it is a book of literature, it's really not that wonderful. Just read Joshua 14 through 19. It's kind of like, really? That's not a great story. A bunch of names and lists. But see, that's for the short-sighted person that's trying to say, oh, the Bible's a nice work of literature. Well, it is that. I would argue it is that. But if that's all it is, then there's some sections of literature that are kind of tedious. And you think, what in the world are they there for if it's just a book of literature? But I love that the Bible's so multifaceted. It is a good book of literature and great stories. I mean, truly, there are no greater stories in all the world than some of the stories we read in the Bible. But it's also a work of history, which is really cool. And sometimes history's a little dry, even in your history books in college or high school. You can remember, oh yeah, it's just history, man. It's dates and places and names and stuff. And that's part of the deal. Knowing history takes a little work. So it shouldn't surprise us when going through the Bible takes a little work. But it also deals with geography, places and names, maps and stuff like that. It does a lot of that. It also deals with science, which is amazing. You know, I love it how the world tries to act like Christians have checked their science brains in. And we don't believe in science. We just believe in the Bible. How ignorant it is to say that, because the Bible's always been right about science. If people would have just said, we believe the Bible about things relating to science, they would have been on good ground. Oh, but Brett, the people of, you know, Christopher Columbus's day thought the earth was flat, and it came from the church pretty much, saying that the church people were saying that everybody knows the world is flat, and if you sail off too far, you'll go off the edge of the earth. It's a flat, you know, deal. But see, if those people that were making that argument would have just read their Bible that said the earth is hung upon nothing and it's a sphere. The Bible says the Bible's this ball that is hung upon nothing. Written thousands and thousands of years ago, long before we knew anything about outer space and our solar system and the earth and the rotation and axis and the sun and the relative position to the sun. Before we knew any of that, the Bible was talking about that stuff. You know, as a scuba diver, this is one of the ones that I think is really amazing, is the Bible talks about these springs that are in the deep of the ocean, springs. And as a scuba diver, we can go to some of these places now and dive. It wasn't really till the 50s and 60s with Jacques Cousteau and those that kind of invented ways for humanity to get down to depth in the ocean. We didn't know anything about springs in the ocean. We thought, what is that all about? Some figurative, flowery language about springs in the depths of the oceans. Amazingly, there are springs that come out. It's an amazing thing. As you dive, you'll be diving along, and all of a sudden you'll hit a really cold pocket of water, and it comes popping out of the ground, and it's a total different type of water. It's not the same saline solution. It's not the same saltiness. It's like a whole different deal, and you say, oh, there's a spring, and you can see that now. The Bible's been telling us that long before scuba. And the list is long where the Bible deals with science. In fact, I think I even did a whole Sunday morning on the Bible and science, if you're interested. There's a long list of things we can talk about. But because the Bible is not just a good story, and it's not just science or history or geography, it includes all those things. But on some of the nights like tonight, we have work to do to understand the dividing up of the land geographically to the 12 tribes of Israel. And there's a bit of repetition here, as we covered how they were going to do it back earlier in Numbers and some other places, but now they're actually doing it. So some of this might even seem somewhat familiar. So let's take a look. Let's get to it. We start here in verse 14, or chapter 14, verse 1. It says, "And these are the countries which the children of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the heads of the fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel distributed for an inheritance to them. By lot was their inheritance, as the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses, for the nine tribes and for the half tribe. For Moses had given the inheritance of the two tribes and a half tribe on the other side of Jordan. But unto the Levites he gave none inheritance among them. For the children of Joseph were two tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim. Therefore they gave no part to the Levites in the land, save the cities to dwell in, with their suburbs for their cattle, for their substance." And it says, "As the Lord commanded Moses, so the children of Israel did, and they divided the land." So this is telling us how they were going to do it. A couple sort of things you need to remember: that the Reubenites, the Gadites, the half-tribe of Manasseh, we already saw them and their division of their land that was given on the east side of the Jordan River. We saw that in our previous study in Joshua chapter 12. We saw the Reubenites and the Gadites, half-tribe of Manasseh, and what have you, get there. So we've already done two and a half tribes. We know where they are. We know where they're settled. Now, before we get into these divisions of the tribe, we're reminded of a guy who made a deal with Moses back when the children of Israel's hearts fainted 40 years earlier. It was Joshua and Caleb who came back. Of the 12 spies, only two, 40 years earlier, came back with a good report saying, "Man, we can do this. We can take the land." But it was the other 10 dudes that said, "Oh, we're grasshoppers in their sight. We're going down. We're going to die." And they caused the hearts of the people to melt, and they fainted with fear, and they wouldn't go in. Thus, the Lord caused them to wander 40 long years in the wilderness. But Caleb said, "Oh, man, we should go in." And Moses said, "No, we got to wander for 40 years. But Caleb said, "When we go into the land 40 years from now, I want the land where the Anakims are. I want the prime land. I want that region." And Moses said, "Okay, you can take it. It's yours when we get there." So it would be Joshua and Caleb would be the only two guys that would survive the 40 years of wilderness wanders. Everybody else was either a child or a younger person who grew up, or their parents all died off in the wilderness, except for Caleb and Joshua. So we come to this deal that Moses made, and let's see what happens in verse 6. "Then the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said unto him, 'Thou knowest the thing that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I was brought, and I brought him word again, as it was in mine heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses sware on that day, saying, Surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake his word unto Moses while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old." That's 85. Verse 11. "As yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now, for war, both to go out and to come in. Now therefore give me this mountain, whereof the Lord spake in that day, for thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to go and drive them out, as the Lord hath said." And Joshua blessed him, and gave unto Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, Hebron for an inheritance. Hebron, therefore, became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, unto this day, because that he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. And the name of Hebron before was Kirjath Arba, which Arba was a great man among the Anakims, or a giant. And the land then had rest from war. So here Caleb, his name literally means dog. He's an amazing guy. We looked at this passage in Joshua 14. We actually taught on this on a Sunday morning when we were going through the book of Numbers, talking about Caleb back then. So we've really kind of talked about this. You can look that one up. It's a sermon on a Sunday we called Copy Caleb, because he's a man that's worth emulating, a guy copying, because he's a good man. He's amazing. What did he accomplish in his life? Well, we see here he maintained amazing health. Isn't that amazing? At 85, he said, "I'm really still ready for warfare." And Joshua says, "Yes, you are. Go ahead." And he goes and fights the toughest people in the land as an 85-year-old guy. You just got to love that, man. Caleb, what an amazing dude. It's funny. For every hour we spend in the gym, science tells us you gain an hour of your life. So if you think about that for a second, you're spending an hour in the gym smelling everybody's sweat and stuff, and then you lose that hour, or you gain that hour in life, or you can just not go to the gym and have fun. Just something to think about. I'm not arguing for not working out, but I came across this. So a percentage of Americans who own running shoes but never run, 87%. Years ago, when I was younger, we had a kid from Prospect, Oregon, down where near where I'm from originally, there in southern Oregon. But he made national news when he got the world sit-up record at the time, which was over 19,000 sit-ups in less than a day. And he was 8 years old, kind of an interesting dude. But all that to say, that's the goal of every American, it seems like. We're so obsessed with age and trying to, prolong our lives and stuff. But I think there's something to Caleb's young life longevity plan. And that is just to say, man, I'm going to trust the Lord. I'm going to walk with the Lord. I'm going to serve the Lord with all my heart. And then look at him. Here he is, 85, as strong as an ox, brave as anyone, and he goes in and takes land. You just got to love that. I think there's something to that that's pretty good. So he maintained amazing health. He was possessing his land like they were all supposed to do, but a lot of the people were afraid to do that. We'll even see tonight where people refuse to possess the land that the Lord tells them to take. But not so with Caleb. He was doing what God wanted him to do, and because of that, he experienced great victory. I love verse 15. It says, "And even though the Anakims were there, the land had rest from war." And so that means Caleb experienced great victory. What we covered back in Numbers was how we talked about how Caleb wholly followed the Lord. Not partially, not half-heartedly, but he did what Colossians 3 tells us, "Whatsoever you do, do it heartily as unto the Lord and not unto men." Caleb's that dude. He wholly followed the Lord. He demonstrated patience. 40-plus years did he wait until the Lord. I worry about my impatience. "Lord, it's been 3 weeks since I've heard from you. 3 weeks since I got the answer to my prayer." But Caleb waited 40-plus years before he could go into the promised land. He was patient. He also lived on the edge. He didn't just settle for second best or the easy place. He liked to go to the hard place. And he was an extremist. He wasn't afraid of stuff. I like that. He also had another spirit about him. We read that in Numbers 14:24, if you recall. He had another spirit. He wasn't a spirit of fear, but he had a spirit of power and a sound mind. We talked about that. He tried to encourage other people. "Come on, we can do this," while everybody else was saying, "No, we're going down." He was the Tigger. They were the Eeyores. And I love Caleb for that. Spoke words of encouragement, but he trusted God even though he was outnumbered. These are the things we looked at several months back, maybe a little over a year ago when we were in Numbers. But I love this. This story of Caleb is one that I love. Caleb's one of my true Bible heroes. So they're getting ready to go in. Caleb says, "I want the land that Moses promised." So that's part of the divvying up of the land is Caleb gets Hebron. We'll talk more about that in a minute. So, the first tribe we're going to deal with is Judah. This is important. Judah gets a huge area, but Judah was a giant tribe. If you recall, when we did the numbering of the tribes, Judah was a big tribe. But also, we're going to see how Judah sort of swallows up the tribe of Simeon later on. We'll see how that all works out. So one thing, just a heads up, this time through the Bible, I've chosen to read every word of the Bible. On this particular time through the scriptures, I'm reading every word. So we're not going to skip anything. Last time I went through it, some of these lists, I just kind of said, so you can read that list of names tonight when you go to bed. And then I'd move on to chapter 16 and stuff like that. We're not going to do that. So wish me luck. Here we go. This is verse 15, chapter 15, verse 1. This then was the lot of the tribe of the children of Judah by their families, even to the border of Edom, the wilderness of Sin. That's how you say that, by the way, Sin. Southward was the uttermost part of the south coast. And their south border was from the shore of the Salt Sea, that would be the Dead Sea, from the bay that looked southward. And it went out south aside to Meale Akrabim. And it passed along to Sin and ascended up on the south side unto Kadesh Barnea and passed along to Hezron and went up to Adar and fetched a compass to Karkaa. From thence it passed toward Asmon and went in to the river of Egypt. And the goings out of that coast were at the sea. This shall be your south coast, and the east border was the Salt Sea, even to the end of Jordan, and their border in the north quarter was from the bay of the sea at the uttermost part of the Jordan, that's the river, and the border went up to Beth-Hogla and passed along by the north of Bet-Ar-Abba. The border went to the stone of Bohan, the son of Reuben. Now, by the way, it's interesting. I bet some of you know the map of Lord of the Rings better than you know this map. You Lord of the Rings fans or Hobbit people, you know, Middle Earth and all that. It's funny to me how popular that is. Everybody's into the geography. And I watch the movies like, where are we now? And my kids have to tell me where we are on the map and stuff like that. But you know, when I read these titles, I really kind of feel very Lords of the Ringish. You know, we got the rock at Bohan and, you know, places that are, they're very Lord of the Rings. And the stories are even more amazing of how these places were taken than even Lord of the Rings. So it can be kind of exciting to learn the geography of this area and actually know what went down for these tribes to get this stuff. I mean, it's really quite a story. And much of the Bible is going to deal with that. But be that as it may, we've got Bohan, the stone of Bohan, the son of Reuben. Verse 7, and the border went up toward Debir from the valley of Achor. Do you remember what happened at the valley of Achor, anyone? Achan! Achan and his possessions and his family was burned to death there because of their sin. That's the valley of Achor. Verse 7, and so northward looking toward Gilgal, that is before the going up of Adumim, which is on the south side of the river. And the border passed toward the waters of Enshemesh. And the goings out thereof were at Enrogel. And the border went up by the valley of the son of Hinnom unto the south side of the Jebusite. The same is Jerusalem. And the border went up to the top of the mountain that lieth before the valley of Hinnom westward, which is at the end of the valley of the giants northward. And the border was drawn from the top of the hill unto the fountain of the water of Nephtuah, and went out to the cities of Mount Ephron. And the border was drawn, and Baalah, which was Kirjath-Jearim, and the border compassed Baalah westward unto Seir, and passed along to the side of Mount Jearim, which is Chesalon in the north side, and went down to Bet-Shemesh, and passed into Timnah. Now, this is a big area that we're talking about. A lot of these towns may sound familiar because there's Bible stories. Bet-Shemesh, for example, is where they opened the Ark of the Covenant when they got it back from the Philistines and looked in, and tons of people died that day at Bet-Shemesh. I actually brought our group to Bet-Shemesh on this last tour, and it's not much of a stop. You pull the bus on the side of the road, and you walk up, and you see these archaeological ruins. There's no signs. There's no tourist spot. But it's Bet-Shemesh. It's the ancient ruins where this happened. We see that. And Timnah, other places. These are all places that we're going to be exploring as we continue through the Bible. So some of these will sound familiar. And the border went unto the side of Ekron northward, and the border was drawn to Shikron and passed along Mount Baalah and went unto Jabneel. And the goings out of the border were at the sea. And the west border was to the great sea and the coast thereof. This is the coast of the children of Judah, round about according to their families. Well, Caleb gets another honorable mention here in verse 13. It says there in verse 13, and unto Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he gave part of the children of Judah according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, even the city of Arba, the father of Anak, which is the city Hebron. And Caleb drove thence three sons of Anak, Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai, the children of Anak. These were giants. And he went up to thence the inhabitants of Debir, and the name of Debir before was Kirjath-Sefer. Okay, so Caleb gets Hebron. It's interesting because Hebron is a key place today. Caleb's the guy who puts Hebron on the map, and it does that right here in verses 13 through 15. Well, let's move on. So verse 16, it says, and Caleb said, he that smiteth Kirjath-Sefer and taketh it, to him will I give Achsah, my daughter, to wife. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, took it, and he gave him Achsah, his daughter, to wife. And it came to pass, as she came unto him, that she moved him to ask of her father a field. And she lighted off her ass, and Caleb said unto her, what wouldest thou? Okay, now pause for a second. What's this? This is, don't you love King James, man? This is great. So here's Caleb's daughter. He gives her this nice chunk of land, and she comes and says, Dad, there's something more that I want. And what is it? Verse 19. She answered, give me a blessing, for thou hast given me a south land. Give me also springs of water. And he gave her upper springs and the nether springs. Now, this is recorded in the Bible. Can anybody think why? I think this is perhaps one of those beautiful snapshots in the Bible that just shows, you know, Caleb, we always see him doing stuff that's cool, that's good, that's right, that's awesome. And I think this is just an example of the Father in heaven. You know, he gives us an inheritance. He gives us a possession. In fact, just as I read this, you can jot this down in your notes. It's Matthew 7. Matthew chapter 7, verse 7, there Jesus says, ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened to you. For everyone that asketh, receiveth. He that seeketh, findeth. And to him that knocketh, the door shall be opened. What man is there of you whom if a son asks for bread, will he give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a snake? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more shall your Father, which is in heaven, give good things to them that ask him. That's Jesus talking. That's very much the Caleb scenario. And she wants a place where there's springing wells of water. Jesus said in John chapter 7, verse 37, Jesus stood on the last day of the feast and he cried out saying, if any man thirst, let him come and drink. And he that believeth on me, as the scripture hath said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. I see this story here in Joshua 14 about Caleb divvying up, or 15, Caleb giving his daughter the springs of water. It's just another one of those beautiful snapshots in the Old Testament, picturing New Testament truths. The Father wants to do that. I wonder if you feel like it's presumptuous to say, Lord, would you fill my life full of your springing well of living water? Lord, I'm going through dry time. I need some water. Will you fill me up? I wonder if some of you think, well, who am I to ask the Lord of anything? Or will he even hear my prayer? Or does God listen? Or does he even care? And we sit around wondering, but Jesus says, ask, seek, knock. It'll be given. He'll hear you. And he'll give you a well of living water. I wonder if we just have yet to ask. I kind of like Caleb's daughter. She's bold because she asks her father and he gives her not only just a spring, but the upper springs and the nether springs. I love that. Good stuff. Well, now, hang on to your hat. We've got the towns of Judah and also the villages. So we got a long list of villages and towns. Here we go. Verse 20. This is the inheritance of the children of Judah according to their families. The uttermost cities of the tribe of the children of Judah toward the coast of Edom. Southward were Kabzeel, and Eder, and Jager, and Kena, and Dimona, and Adada, and Kedesh, and Hatzor, and Ithnan. You've also got Ziph, and Telem, and Bealoth, and Hatzor, and Hadatah and Kerioth and Hezron, which is Hazor, and Ammon and Shema and Molada, and Hazar Gada, and Heshmon, and Beth Palet, and Hazar Shual, and Beersheba, and Biz Jothja, and Baala. You guys think, is Brett speaking in tongues up there? Need an interpretation for those tongues. No, it's just names. Verse 29, Baala, and Ayim, and Azem, and Eltulad, and Cheslil, and Horma. And Ziklag. Does anybody remember what happened at Ziklag? David, yes. David and his army came to their town, Ziklag, and found it wiped out by the Amalekites. So David, they wanted to stone him to death. They're at the end of the book of 1 Samuel. But he said, okay, guys, strap on your swords. We're going to go find those Amalekites. And they went and wiped out the Amalekites and saved every one of their women, their children, and they inherited the new town of the Amalekites, which is way better than even Ziklag. So the Lord worked it all out. It's a great story there at the last chapter of 1 Samuel. But there's all these towns really do have stories and interesting things. So you got verse 31, Ziklag and Madmena and Sansenna and Lebaloth and Shilhim and Ain and Rimmon. And all the cities are 20 and 9 with their villages. And in the valley of Eshtaol, and Zoria, and Ashna, and Zenoah, and Engaminim, Tapua, and Ennam, Jarmuth, and Adullam, Soko, and Azekah. Anybody remember what happened at Adullam? That's where David cut the robe of Saul. Remember, he was in the caves at Adullam. Good. Joey, you get an extra 10 points tonight. Good job. that's right. Verse 36, and Sha'raim, and Adithaim, and Gadira, and Gadirothaim. 14 cities with their villages. Zenon, and Hadesha, and Migdal-Gad, and Dilion, and Mitzpah, and Jokthiel, Lachish, and Bashkath. Eglon, and Kabon, and Lamam, and Kithlish, and Gediroth, Bet Dagon, and Naama, and Makeda, 16 cities with their villages. So these are like regions, if you would, sort of maybe we would say maybe counties or districts of Judah is kind of the idea. And that's why they're breaking these up into different names and what have you. So verse 42, you got Libna, Ether, and Ashen, and Jiphtha, and Ashna, and Nizib, and Keilah, and Achzib, and Marisha, 9 cities with their villages, Ekron with her towns and her villages, from Ekron even unto the sea, all that lay near Ashdod with their villages, Ashdod with her towns and her villages, Gaza with her towns and her villages under the river of Egypt, and the Great Sea and the border thereof. Now, we just listed some cities that are really important. We, in fact, 4 of 5 cities that are really important that you should know about. Ekron, Ashdod, and Gaza. Now, we also read about Hazor, or Hazor, as they say in Israel. I want to show you a few of these places. First of all, Hazor, that's mentioned in verses 22. And you'll notice there's other places called Hazor, but sometimes they would sort of join 2 little villages to become one. And so there's some different names, but they all say, well, that's technically Hazor. It's a little bit like maybe you would say Newburgh and Dundee, but it's all kind of over there by Newburgh or Lafayette to Sherwood. That kind of region's more of the Newburgh area. That's kind of like Hazor. But this is Hazor. This is an amazing place. We read about this a couple weeks ago where the children of Israel wiped out Hazor. Joshua and one of the battles that we read about recently. This is a lower section here of Hazor that's still, it's an amazingly good shape. Even near here is a place where they worshiped Baal, and you can still see the altars there. But we read about the children of Israel conquering it. Now, what's interesting is that you can see the difference in stones. The people that were Canaanites built up Hazor, and that you're looking at Canaanite stones right there. But when the Jews wiped out Hazor, They didn't really use the whole city, but up on the top of the hill, which is where this little lookout thing was, there's some archaeological digs where they found Israeli-built stones after they defeated the men at Hazor. And it's kind of an amazing deal because the archaeology fits the biblical narrative. So when we read stories about Hazor and how the Israelis took it over, what's really cool is the Bible is confirmed archaeologically when you go to these sites. Hazor is an amazing place. We're going to read about it all throughout the Bible. So that's kind of the first thing. You got Hazor. I think those are all the pictures I got tonight of Hazor. Oh, at Hazor, there's a spring that they dug down to. And this goes like maybe 70, 80 feet down in a hole. We went down those stairs. And as you go down there, it's how about the city of Hazor got all their water. It's a really high-tech deal for those times in those regions. So is that all my Hazor stuff? Okay, then we've got we move to these other cities. Now this is down, Hazor's kind of a different location, more in the mountains of Israel. But when you go down into the south, you see the Mediterranean Sea on our map there. In the southern part of the Mediterranean Sea of the area of Judah, that coastline there is where all the Philistines lived. That's important for you to picture. When you realize the children of Israel were fighting the Philistines lived in that southern region right off the Mediterranean Sea. The Gaza, city of Gaza, Ekron, Ashkelon, Ashdod, and Ekron. Those were the cities of the Philistines, and they were all in that southern region. But we're told right here, those should have been the cities of Judah. The point that I make is the Philistines, had Joshua and the men of Judah gone in and done what they were supposed to do, they wouldn't have had the trouble they did with the Philistines. Now, the Philistines, by the way, were they ancient people that lived on that coastline? No. The Philistines were actually a Phoenician seafaring people that came up from Phoenicia and came down the Mediterranean Sea on boats and landed on that shore and took over that shore. And they lived there. And they fought the Jews all the way through Solomon's reign. The Philistines were a real problem. Of course, we've got those Philistine cities. The next city that's listed here is Ashdod. Now, Ashdod's a whole different deal. We went there at nighttime, and this is right on the Mediterranean Sea. Beautiful city. In fact, I would like to live in this town if it wasn't for missiles flying over every day, hitting it. But other than that, it's beautiful. It's like driving down Laguna Beach, you know, and just this beautiful town. And then we go down to Gaza. I didn't take a ton of pictures there. We went right to Gaza, and that's my crew right there. But right, the stuff you're looking at right behind us, that's in the Gaza Strip. That's no longer really accessible. If you want to live, you don't go into Gaza. It's really sad. They tried to trade Gaza Strip land for peace. And after Ariel Sharon gave up the Gaza Strip to the Palestinians, the Hamas took over, Sharon had a stroke and went and lived really as a vegetable the rest of his life. Couldn't communicate, couldn't talk, still kind of just a really sad story. But the Gaza Strip is a very scary place today because of Hamas, and it's a dangerous area. But that's where we are there. So you got all these places. We even went to Gath, and I'm going to save my pictures and video of Gath because that was amazing. That was an amazing thing. I can't wait to show you that when we get to the story of Goliath. But all that to say, these are four of those five cities, excluding Gath, in this description. So that's all Philistine country. The Jews should have taken that over according to this passage in chapter 15. So verse 48, and in the mountains of Shemir and Jatir and Soko and Danah and Kirjath Sanah, which is Deber, and Anab and Eshtimo and Anim and Goshen and Holon and Gilo, 11 cities with their village, Arab and Duma and Eshion and Janum and Bet Tapua and Ethka and Humta, and Kirjath Arba, which is Hebron, and Zior, 9 cities with their villages, Maon, Carmel, Zeph, Jutah, and Jezreel, and Jokdedam, and Zenoah, Cain, Gibeah, Timnah, 10 cities with their villages, Halhul, Betzur, and Gedor, and Maakrath, and Bet Enot, and Electon, Electicon, and 6 cities with their villages. Kirjath-Baal, which is Kirjath-Jearim, and Rabbah, two cities with their villages in the wilderness, Beit Arba, and Medin, and Sika'a, and Nibshan, and the six and the cities of Salt, and En-Gedi, six cities with their villages. Now, this just shows you how huge the region of Judah is. Those of you that have been to Israel with us, Judah included when we went to the tank base, when we went to Latrun and saw the Israeli tanks, if you were with us. But that's a long drive when you go all the way across the mountains of Israel to En-Gedi. En-Gedi is right on the Dead Sea side of the tribe of Judah. Massive region, the biggest region of all the tribes. They get all these towns. That's why this chapter has 63 verses, because it's such a large region and there's a lot of towns. But En-Gedi is an amazing place, worth the trip to Israel alone, if you ask me, going to this place. But be that as it may, verse 63 was our text for Sunday. As for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the children of Judah could not drive them out, but the Jebusites dwell with the children of Judah at Jerusalem until this day. By the time this was done being written, the Jebusites still lived there. It wouldn't be till 300 years later when David would take the city of Jerusalem. We looked at that on Sunday. Chapter 16, it says, "And the lot of the children of Joseph fell from Jordan by Jericho unto the water of Jericho on the east from the wilderness that goes up from Jericho throughout Mount Bethel. And out of Bethel to Luz and passeth along the borders of Arki to Ataroth. And goeth down west from the coast of Japhelti to the coast of Beit Horon, and neither another, and to Gezer, the goings out thereof at the sea. So the children of Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim, took their inheritance." Now, just a reminder, Joseph is not usually called a tribe of Israel. And the reason? Because Joseph had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, and they oftentimes were the two tribes. Okay? And we've covered this in previous studies. Why are some of the tribes mentioned in these lists of tribes and others aren't? Tribe of Dan sometimes is left out. Tribe of Simeon is sometimes left out. Joseph's left out of these lists, but a lot of times in the Bible. But you have to understand, sometimes the tribe is Ephraim and Manasseh, which is two tribes, and then Dan will be left out, or Levi will be left out, because they're the priest tribe that didn't have an inheritance. So don't be confused or troubled when you read a list of the 12 tribes of Israel in the Bible, and you're like, but what happened to Dan? Like in the book of Revelation. Or what happened to Simeon? You have to understand there's reasons, which we don't have time to go into tonight, but we have done in-depth studies on. In fact, you can read our study through Revelation and actually see a pretty in-depth reason of why tribes. It has to do with the curses of each of the sons of Jacob and the blessings given by Jacob in Genesis chapter 49. And there's reasons why some of the tribes are kind of cursed. Simeon was one of those tribes, by the way, we'll see here in a minute, that was kind of cursed because of what he did to the men at Shechem. We'll go into that. So we're dealing with Joseph, but we're going to now split it into two, the tribe of Ephraim and Manasseh, which were sons of Joseph. Are you guys with me on that? Okay, so verse 5, "And the border of the children of Ephraim, according to their families, was thus, even the border of their inheritance on the east side was at Ataroth-Adar, unto Beth Horon and the upper. And the border went out toward the sea to Michmita on the north side, and the border went out eastward to Te'anath-Silo, and passed by it on the east to Janoha, and it went down from Janoha at Ataroth and to Ne'avroth, and came to Jericho, and went out at Jordan. The border went out from Tapua westward unto the river Kana, and the goings out thereof were at the sea. This is the inheritance of the tribe of the children of Ephraim by their families, and their separate cities, for the children of Ephraim were among the inheritance of the children of Manasseh, all the cities with their villages, and they drave out the Canaanites that dwelt there in the land of Gezer. By the Canaanites dwell among the Ephraimites unto this day and serve under tribute." So they let some of these Canaanites live. You think that was a good idea? No, they were supposed to kill them. These guys are paying taxes. Ooh, that sounds like a good plan. Tax them. Let them live and get taxes from them. That would work for a season, but it would end up hurting them, obviously, in the last. Well, that brings us to chapter 17. Let's get through the tribe of Manasseh. This is the other half of Joseph's tribe. There was also a lot for the tribe of Manasseh. Verse 1, for he was the firstborn of Joseph, to wit, for Machir, the firstborn of Manasseh, the father of Gilead, because he was a man of war. Therefore he had Gilead and Bashan. There was also a lot for the rest of the children of Manasseh by their families, for the children of Abiezer, for the children of Halek, for the children of Asriel, and for the children of Shechem, and for the children of Hepher, and for the children of Shemida. These were the male children of Manasseh, the son of Joseph, by their families. But Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, had no sons, but daughters. And these are the names of his daughters: Mahla, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, and Tirzah. Does this ring a bell? We talked about these girls. We're not going to go into it because we got to get through this tonight. But you can check them out in our previous studies that we covered. And we'll hear more about these later too. Verse 4, and they came near before Eleazar the priest and before Joshua, son of Nun, before the princes, saying, the Lord commanded Moses to give us an inheritance among our brethren. Therefore, according to the commandment of the Lord, he gave them an inheritance among the brethren of their father. And there fell 10 portions of Manasseh beside the land of Gilead and Bashan, which were on the other side of Jordan, because the daughters of Manasseh had an inheritance among his sons, and the rest of Manasseh's sons had the land of Gilead. So if you recall, those girls came and protested in front of Moses, and Moses heard their plea and gave them their wish because they were sort of being unfairly treated as women. And I love how the Lord is fair and cares, and we covered that in depth. It's a good story back there in the book of Numbers. That was in Numbers 27, if you recall. Good stuff. Verse 7, and the coast of Manasseh was from Asher to Michmethah, and that lieth before Shechem, and the border went along on the right hand unto the inhabitants of Entapuah. Now Manasseh had the land of Tapuah, but Tapuah on the border of Manasseh belonged to the children of Ephraim. And the coast descended unto the river Kana, southward of the river. These cities of Ephraim are among the cities of Manasseh. The coast of Manasseh also was on the north side of the river, and the outgoings of it were at the sea. Southward it was Ephraim's, and northward it was Manasseh's, and the sea and his border. And they met together in Asher on the north, and in Issachar on the east. And Manasseh had Issachar and Asher, Bethshean, and her towns, Ibleam, her towns, and the inhabitants of Dor, and her towns, and the inhabitants of Endor, and her towns, and the inhabitants of Te'anak, and her towns, and the inhabitants of Megiddo, and her towns, even three countries. Yet the children of Manasseh could not drive out the inhabitants of those cities, but the Canaanites would dwell in that land. Yet it came to pass, when the children of Israel were waxing strong, that they put the Canaanites to tribute, but did not utterly drive them out. In other words, they were strong enough to say, you guys are under our rule, but they didn't kill them. And it's going to cause trouble. So Joshua's going to have a discussion with the people of Ephraim and Manasseh. And it's kind of an interesting thing. Let's check this out. So it says in verse 14, the children of Joseph spake unto Joshua, saying, why hast thou given me but one lot and one portion to inherit, seeing I am a great people, for as much as the Lord hath blessed me hitherto? Now, this is the classic old sibling rivalry. Hey, why did he get more than I got? Right? I mean, is that what your kids did? Or is that what you did with your brothers? Hey, his cookie's bigger than my cookie. That's all that's happening here. These guys are saying, Ephraim and Manasseh, hey, Joshua, you gave us too small of a place, and we're a great people, they said. Now, look at Joshua's answer, verse 15. Joshua answered and said, if thou be a great people, then get thee up to the wood country and cut down for thyself there the land of the Perizzites and of the giants, if Mount Ephraim be too narrow for thee. And the children of Joseph said, the hill is not enough for us, and all the Canaanites that dwell in the land of the valley have chariots of iron, both they who are of Bethshean and her towns, and they who are of the valley of Jezreel. And Joshua spake unto the house of Joseph, even to Ephraim and to Manasseh, saying, thou art a great people, and hast great power. Thou shalt not have one lot only, but the mountain shall be thine, for it is a wood. And thou shalt cut it down, and the outgoings of it shall be thine, for thou shalt drive out the Canaanites, though they have iron chariots and though they be strong. By the way, these Canaanites were strong. They were based out of Megiddo, which the Canaanite gate at Megiddo is there to this day. And you can see it. And it was a great fortified city. The archaeological digs at Megiddo are amazing. I've shown you pictures of that in previous studies. Beit She'an was another amazing city of the Canaanites. Joshua says, take those cities, fight those people with chariots, but they're strong. And he said, if we're a great people, you should have given us more country. And he says, you are a great people, so wipe out the Canaanites. Interesting. No nonsense, Joshua. I love that. Chapter 18. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel assembled together at Shiloh and set up the tabernacle of the congregation there. And the land was subdued before them. And there remained among the children of Israel seven tribes which had not yet received their inheritance. And Joshua said to the children of Israel, how long are you slack to go and possess the land which the Lord your fathers have given you? In other words, these other tribes seem to be content just to kind of hang out and say, well, we don't really care. Those guys got their land. We'll just hang out here with you, Joshua. And Joshua's like, there's seven more tribes. What are you talking about? So he says, get over here to Shiloh and let's divvy up the land. Now, what's Shiloh? This is an important place. Shiloh was a great place. It's where the tabernacle would be situated. This is where these last seven tribes, they'd throw lots, cast lots, just like Numbers told them to do, to divvy up the land. By the way, casting of lots for the land, is that a good practice? It's kind of funny. It's almost like throwing the dice and then saying, okay, well, you guys get this land. And so and they were divvying it up that way. But it's interesting. Proverbs 16:33 says this, the lot is cast into the lap, but the whole disposing thereof is of the Lord. So the Lord steered the casting of these lots and got these people in the right place is the idea. So verse 4 says in chapter 18, give out from among you three men for each tribe, and I will send them that they shall rise and go through the land and describe it according to the inheritance of them, and they shall come again unto me, and they shall divide it into seven parts. Judah shall abide in their coast on the south, and the house of Joseph, that's Ephraim and Manasseh, they shall abide in their coast on the north. And you therefore describe the land, or set forth the land into seven parts, and bring the description hither to me. In other words, make a map, divide it all up. You guys that are, they were probably good at surveying and what have you, divvy it up and into seven parts, and bring the description hither to me, and that I may cast lots for you here before the Lord your God. Now pause for this. Is kind of funny. Remember I told you the sisters and brothers and who got the biggest cookie? The Jews had a way of doing this. If you're a parent, this is great stuff. So you got some brownies you're going to give the kids. You have three kids. What they would do, the Jews would say with anything, with land or with cookies or whatever, they would take the brownie chunk and put it in front of the oldest sibling. And the oldest then would take a knife and cut the brownies into three parts, one for him, one for his other siblings, two other siblings. The only catch was he got the last piece. So he'd cut it up. Then the youngest would take a piece, and then the middle would take a piece, and then the oldest would take a piece. Do you understand? The oldest would be, I'm going to make sure this is cut up very evenly and take great care to divvy it up fairly, because he'd get the last of it, right? That's kind of what Josh was doing with the land. There's seven tribes left. He sends these guys out, says, okay, divide the land into seven parts. Then we're going to cast lots and divvy up the land, so make sure it's fair. That's the way God made sure his people were being fair. You understand that? Kind of cool. Verse 7, but the Levites have no part among you, for the priesthood of the Lord is their inheritance. And Gad and Reuben and the half-tribe of Manasseh have received their inheritance beyond Jordan on the east, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave them. And the men rose up and went away. Joshua charged them that they went to describe or divide up the land, saying, go and walk through the land, describe it, and come again to me that I may here cast lots for you before the Lord in Shiloh. And the men went and passed through the land and described it by the cities into seven parts into a book and came again to Joshua, the host at Shiloh. And Joshua cast lots for them in Shiloh before the Lord. And there Joshua divided the land unto the children of Israel according to their divisions. So basically what we have here is now in chapters 18 and 19, the dividing up of those seven last tribes. Let's get through this quickly. Here we go. Verse 11, the lot of the tribe of the children of Benjamin came up according to their families, and the coast of their lot came forth between the children of Judah and the children of Joseph. And their border was on the north side from Jordan. The border went up to the side of Jericho on the north side and went up through the mountains westward. And the goings out thereof were at the wilderness of Beth Aven. And the border went over from thence toward Luz, to the side of Luz, which is at Bethel. At the border ascended Ataroth Adar, near the hill that lieth on the side of the nether Beth Horon. Now, some of you are saying, Brett, some of these cities were in the other tribes. That's correct. But you have to understand, these cities were borders. They were like stakes in the ground dividing up the areas. It doesn't mean that the men of Judah, for example, can't share a city with the tribe of Benjamin. They can live in the same city. And they can both take possession of that city together. But that's like the border town between the two. And it's okay that they live or take both of those cities. So don't be confused by that. Very important. Where was I? What verse? 14. And the border was drawn thence and compassed the corner of the sea southward from the hill that lieth before Bet Horon southward. And the goings out thereof were at Kiryath Baal. Anybody recognize a word in that Kiryath Baal? Baal. It's a place where they worshipped Baal, the Canaanites, which was Kiryath Jearim, the city of the children of Judah, which was the west quarter. So the south quarter was from the end of Kiryath Jearim to the border, went out on the west, and went out to the wall, the well of waters at Nephtuah. And the border came down to the end of the mountain that lieth before the valley of the son of Hinnom, which was in the valley of the giants on the north, and descended to the valley of Hinnom, to the side of Jebusi, to the south, and descended to En-Rogel, and was drawn from the north, and went to En-Shemesh, and went forth to Gilioloth, which is over against the going up of Adumim, and descended the stone of Bohan, the son of Reuben, and passed along toward the side over against Araba toward the northward, pardon me, and went down to Araba. And the border passed along the side of Beth Hogla northward, and outgoings of the border were at the north bay of the Salt Sea at the south end of Jordan. This was the south coast. And Jordan was the border of it on the east side. This was the inheritance of the children of Benjamin by the coast thereof round about according to their families. Now the cities of the tribes of the children of Benjamin according to their families were Jericho, just in case you didn't get it the first time, and Beth Hogla and the valley of Kaziz and Beth Arba and Zemarim and Bethel and Avim and Para and Oprah Winfrey, there in verse 23, sorry, Oprah. Verse 24, Kephar Ha'amboanai and Ophni and Gaba and 12 cities with their villages, Gibeon, Ramah, Beeroth, Mitzpah, Kephira and Moza and Rekim and Irpil and Tarala and Zila and Eleph and Jebusi, which is Jerusalem, Gibeah and Kiryath, 14 cities with their villages. This is the inheritance of the children of Benjamin according to their families. Now, you say, Brett, this is tedious, man. But think about if you were these tribes, these cities would be extremely helpful to help define the region that you lived in. And this would be sort of like going into the county seat and looking up the records of your property lines. This is how important it was for the Jews. Now, you say, Brett, this is so painful, though. But here's what's amazing to me. The world's trying to say today that the Jews really don't have any right to be in Israel. They were never even there, the Arabs will try to say. Meanwhile, you've got this painstaking direction of property lines perfectly defining their territories. I mean, is there any more solid evidence? Like, you could go down to the Clackamas County place and they probably lost your files on your property line. We've been a part of that. Debbie and I have seen that. One time we went in to find out something about our property. They said, oh, there was a fire and those files burnt. They don't have them. But what's so funny about this is right here in the Bible, you've got Israel's property lines and the tribes and all the cities named where archaeologically all these cities have been dug up. And they say, yeah, that was all there. How much more legitimate can you be than any country in the whole world saying these borders are totally legit and these were written, more than 3,000 years ago? That's an amazing thing to me. So I read these stories and these crazy names with sort of a joy in my heart, knowing that, man, who can argue against this? That's the point. Well, let's quickly. I know it's getting late, but we can zip through 19 in no time at all. You'll thank me next week. So verse 1, and the second lot came forth to Simeon. This is the second of the seven tribes left. So now Simeon, even for the tribe of the children of Simeon, according to their families and their inheritance, was within the inheritance of the children of Judah. And they had their inheritance, Beersheba and Sheba and Molada and Hazar Shual and Bela and Azim and Elotad and Betuel and Horma and Ziklag and Bethmarcabot and Hazar Susa and Belbiot and Sarut and 13 cities in their villages, Ain, Rimon, and Ether, and Ashan, and 4 cities in their villages, and all their villages that were round about these cities, Beth-Lath-Beer, Ramoth, and the south. This is the inheritance of the tribe of the children of Simeon, according to their families. Out of the portion of the children of Judah was the inheritance of the children of Simeon, for the part of the children of Judah was too much for them. Therefore, the children of Simeon had their inheritance within the inheritance of them. Verse 10, and the third lot, that's the third tribe of the last seven, came up from the children of Zebulun. According to their families, the border of their inheritance was Sarid, and their border went toward the sea and Marala and reached to Dab-Sheth and reached over that which is before Jokneam. And turned from Sarid eastward to the sun rising unto the border of Kislot Tabor, which goes up out of Dibirat, and there goeth up to Japhia. And from thence passeth along to the east to Gittat Hepher, to Ittat Kazin, and goeth out of Rimon Mithoar to Nea. And the border compassed it north side, Hanathon, and the outgoings thereof in the valley of Jiphthael, and Kat-Tat, and Nahalal, and Shimron, and Adalah, and Bethlehem. What happened at Bethlehem? Of course. I don't know why you didn't say anything, but I just know you're thinking it. Jesus was born in Bethlehem. 12 cities and their villages. This is the inheritance of the children of Zebulun. According to their families, these are the cities with their villages. The fourth lot came to Issachar. For the children of Issachar, according to their families, their border was toward Jezreel, and Chelsulot, and Shunem, and Hapharim, and Shidon, and Anahatrat, and Rabit, and Kish, Eon, and Abez, and Remeth, and En Ganim, and En Hadah, and Bet Paziz. Aren't you glad there's not a test after this? And the coast reaches to Tabor, and Shehazima and Bet Shemesh, and the outgoings of their border, Jordan, 16 cities with their villages. This is the inheritance of the tribe of the children of Issachar, according to their family and the cities of their villages. The fifth lot came out of the tribe of the children of Israel, Asher, according to their families. Their border was Helkat, Hali, and Beten, and Akshaf, and Alamelech, and Amad, and Mishiel, and reacheth to Carmel, eastward to Shihor Libna, and turned toward the sun rising to Beth Dagon, and reached to Zebulun, to the valley of Jiphthael, to toward the north side of Bethlehemek at Neil, and goeth out to Kebel on the left hand, and Hebron and Rehob and Hamron and Cana, even to the great Zidon. And then the coast turned to Ramah and to the strong city of Tyre. And the coast turneth to Hosa, and out of the goings thereof at the sea from the coast to Akzib. So you'll notice some of these names, by the way, dealing with this tribe of Asher. Asher's up there toward the top on the Mediterranean Sea. This is a beautiful area, and it goes up there toward, as you get close to Lebanon on the seacoast. But it includes some of these towns like Carmel, where Mount Carmel was, where Elijah killed the prophets of Baal, and what have you. Verse 30, Umlah, also Aphek, and Rehob, 20 and 2 cities with their villages. This is the inheritance of the tribe of Asher, according to their families, these cities and with their villages. The sixth lot of seven, verse 32, came to the children of Naphtali, even for the children of Naphtali, according to their families, and their coast was from Heleph to from Alon to Zaanim, and Adami and Nekeb and Jabneel unto Lakum. And the outgoings thereof were at Jordan. And then the coast turneth westward to Azoth Tabor, and goeth out from thence Hukkok, and reacheth to Zebulun on the south side, and reacheth to Asher on the west side, to Judah upon Jordan upon the sun rising. And the fenced cities are Zedim, Zer, and Hamat, Raka, and the Chinnereth, and Adma, and Ramah, and Hatzor, Kedesh, and Edrei, and Ahazor, and Iron, and Migdalel, and Horam, and Bet Anat, and Bet Shemesh, 19 cities in their villages. This is the inheritance of the tribe, the children of Naphtali, according to their families, and the cities and their villages. Does anybody recognize in verse 35, Chinnereth? Does anybody know what that is? Sea of Galilee, that's correct. The Sea of Galilee is enviable. If I'm the tribe of Naphtali, I'd be thinking, we scored. Because the Sea of Galilee is the best part of Israel, if you ask me. If I had to live in Israel, I'd want to live right down in that little valley, somewhere near Capernaum. I'd move there. It's very peaceful, very amazing. That's the Sea of Galilee. Well, there it is. Let's go. Only have one more of the tribes. Verse 40, the seventh lot came out for the tribe of the children of Dan, according to their families. And the coast of their inheritance was Zorah, and Eshtaol, and Irshemesh, and Shelabin, and Ajalon, and Jethla, and Elon, and Timnatha, and Ekron, and Eltika, and Gibbethon, and Baalat, and Jehud, and Beni Birak, and Gath Rimon, and Mijar Khan, and Rakon, with the border before Jaffo. Does anybody know what Jaffo? Can anybody guess what Jaffo is? Joppa. That's correct. Some of your newer translations kind of gave that away, I guess. You know, the tribe of Dan, if you'll notice, they're just above Judah on the Mediterranean Sea. And that's another place I would like to live, Joppa, where Jonah ran from the Lord. When God said go, Jonah said no. It's a seaport village on the Mediterranean Sea, just beautiful down there. It's where the gospel first reached the Gentiles. If you remember the house of Simon the Tanner, it's where Peter saw the sheet come down from heaven. And this was part of the tribe of Dan. And it's just, again, it's a tropical little beach town in Joppa. And there's some little shops and some good food. And it's just a really cool little place, Joppa. But it really is the birthplace of Christianity for the Gentiles, if you remember. It's kind of an amazing place. So that was part of this tribe of Dan. They got Joppa. Now, they would end up forsaking this area. Can anybody guess why? It had to do with chariots. The Danites loved this area, except for the fact that there were the Canaanites that were still there with chariots, and they were struggling. They didn't want to take the land. So instead, they spied out the land up in the north, and years later, we'll read about this in the Bible, where the Danites said, we're out of here. And they left Joppa, and they went up to a place called Lachish, and they took over that place. And now it's a place you can go visit called Tel Dan, where the Danites moved to the northern region. Tel Dan's a pretty nice place too, but they didn't have to fight people with chariots up there. It was a place where they were safe. So Jaffo, very important. So verse 47, the coast of the children of Dan went out too little for them. Therefore the children of Dan went up to fight against Leshem and took it and smote it with the edge of the sword and possessed it and dwelt there and called Leshem Dan after the name of Dan, their father. This is the inheritance of the tribe of the children of Dan according to their families, these cities with their villages. And when they made an end of dividing the land of the inheritance by their coasts, the children of Israel gave an inheritance to Joshua, the son of Nun, among them. According to the word, the Lord gave him the city which he asked, even Timnath-serah in the mount of Ephraim, and he built the city and dwelt there. These are the inheritances which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the heads of the fathers of the tribes of children of Israel divided up for an inheritance by lot in Shiloh before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. So they made an end of dividing their country. So here's the record that says this land is the children of Israel's. God gave it to them, and yet the world today says, nope, the Jews need to get out. The Iranian says, we're going to drive the Israelis into the sea, even though they've been there for 3,000 plus years. Kind of an amazing thing. Well, you made it. Congratulations. I have no idea. Yeah, that's awesome. Good job, you guys. I don't know, have any idea how that's going to sound on our radio program, but people will be driving down the road. What? Click. I don't know. We'll see. Let's all stand together. Lord, we are thankful. This passage of Scripture, these six chapters, are lists of names, but at the same time, it causes us to marvel at how you really did give your people this inheritance. And Lord, we see how someday you're going to come and rule and reign for your people again in Jerusalem. And we see that you put your name on Jerusalem. And you still love the 12 tribes of Israel and have a plan and a purpose for them. So we take this time tonight where others would bypass these passages. We take this time because we know your word is living and powerful, and we think that your word is inspired and every word has something for us. So we read these words, and I pray, Lord, that even if we don't understand all of this or even don't know how to pronounce these names, I pray that as the water of the word is going through our lives, that it would just wash us in the water of your word, that we would know the truth of the scriptures and follow your word daily. So bless these people for carving out time on a Wednesday night, doing the hard work in these chapters. Lord, I pray you'd bring forth good fruit in their lives because of that, Father. In Jesus' name, amen.
To take advantage of our media ministry, we encourage you to visit us anytime at athecreek.com, where we have all of Pastor Brett's Bible studies available as a free download.